Good afternoon, planet Earth. Good afternoon to the Hoagly folk and the Scrimuli. Good afternoon to the Scrumptons and the Promptons and to all the people whose last name is Noise that live in the great state of Rhode Island. It is August the 30th, 2023, just around 12:13 p.m. here in Greenkentown, Washington, on the peninsula. The waves are rolling in. The waves are rolling out. People being sucked under. You can hear them screaming. Buried in debt. Buried in problems. Holding on to anchors for dear life as they sink deeper. So, just to give you some information, I think I've come up with a plan as far as where I'm going next. I think it's a solid plan. I can't really tell you too many details at this point. I will tell you that it involves doing something like going back to Washington State I thought I wouldn't do. But then again, I was kind of hoping the situation in Utah would more or less stabilize into something where I could be there in Nowhere, Utah, where I was at, Scompton. I was hoping I could stay in Scompton for a while. But sometimes Scompton chases you away. Sometimes Scompton says, hey, you don't belong here, hobo. It's time to hit the road, baby. Time to hit the road, baby. Time to head away from Scompton. Time to find your way out. And to give you a sense of where I'm headed, there's a horror film that came out in 1970, specifically 1978. Anthony Hopkins is in it. And Margaret, you get to see her boobies. They're nice. The name of the film is Magic. And it's about a ventriloquist magician who becomes successful but ends up going a little bit crazy. His little ventriloquist starts talking to him. Hey, Corky, how you doing? Hey, Corky, you love me. You love me better than Anne Margaret. Why don't you go and do something? Take care of her for me, Corky. Yes, if you watch this film, you might get a sense of where I'm headed. Not that I'm very successful, but I could be crazy. So one of the things I was thinking about the other day, and again, I'm not here to beat up on boomers. I think generational warfare is part of the divide and conquer. There's divide and conquer around race going on right now. There's divide and conquer around gender. There's divide and conquer around generations, turning old versus young and young versus old. And none of this is particularly accidental. There's divide and conquer on issues, COVID, vaccines, Ukraine war, Donald Trump, Biden, lots of divide and conquer, lots of separation. No real solutions, no interest in approaching problems rationally, just lots and lots and lots of dividing people into smaller groups that are angry with each other and will resolve nothing. But it occurred to me the other day that many of those nasty young hippies from the 60s, the radical hippies, the nasty young smellies, the ones with the hair growth, a lot of them grew up to be bitter, angry, nasty old people. Not all of them. It's not about the generation. It's not about being old for all my listeners who consider themselves boomers. But they'd even agree, I think, especially if you're a Vietnam vet Not that I supported that war. I was basically born when that war was winding down. It's more of an issue of the choices people made and the positions they took. And the young radicals of the 1960s, the quote-unquote Berkeley radicals of the free speech movement, morphed into the censors, the ones telling us there's a language code, there are good words and bad words. It's one of the reasons why your good friend Uncle Dan makes words up like boovula. Boovula is a word I made up. And boovula means, you know, something private, something, you know, that is a body part, that's all. That's what a boovula is. It sounds dirty, but it's made up. So it'll take at least years or decades before the speech Nazis catch up to me. And that includes the AI. No, I just think it's interesting to reflect upon. The free speech radicals of the 60s, the ones who believed in free speech, in their older age have run away from it. Out of fear, out of concern that words are bad, that words are scary. And I'll propose to you the same thought experiment I did back in 2019. And I've covered this before. Imagine I'm at a bar and you're one of these people who thinks you should censor words. If you listen to my podcast, the likelihood of that is zero. But let's just say for the sake of argument that you support speech codes. We're at a bar and you're sitting there with whatever drink you're drinking and your purple hair. And I say to you, listen, buddy, because keep in mind, as part of this thought experiment, you could use money. I don't know any normal people that can't use money these days, even the dirty money. So we're sitting at a bar, and I say, here's $100. And you can do one of two things. You can go out into the alley, and I can scream at you for 60 seconds. And during those 60 seconds, I won't even scream. I'll just speak in a loud tone. And I'll say some of the most profane, racist, homophobic, nastiest crap you can imagine for 60 seconds. And you can cover your ears. And you can even go na 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 na. And you can stand 3 feet away for 60 seconds. And you'll earn $100. Or I can take a baseball bat and take one swing at your skull for $100. And you say, Dan, that's weird. Is it really, though? In lieu of speech, in lieu of communication, even communication that offends us, because, by the way, that's what the First Amendment's about. It's not about protecting hello or good morning or the language of obedience. It's not about protecting the speech that makes you feel good. It's about protecting speech that, frankly, might not make you feel good, including me. You know, I'm not a big fan of sticking the crucifix in a glass of urine. But, you know, if that's an artwork as it was 25, 30 years ago, guess what? That's also free speech. And should there be limits? Absolutely. I follow the non-aggression principle. If your speech results in the abuse of another adult involuntarily or any child, in my opinion, you're not doing speech. You're doing some type of wretched violence. But when it comes to words and ideas, what should be the limits? Because once you start limiting them, then you better stare at the baseball bat. Then you better think about that character from The Walking Dead, Negan. The moment you want to step back and say, well, Dan, some ideas are too dangerous, guess what is more guess what's more dangerous? I'm going to drink a little bit of soda here. Sugar-free, just sparkling water. Guess what's more dangerous than scary words? Scary people willing to commit violence. And that's what happens next. That's what happens next in the story. When you shut down communication, the only form of communication that humans have left in a state of frustration is violence. That's it. So it may seem like an absurd choice. Dan, you're going to give me $100, but I have to listen to you say vile stuff for a whole minute? Or I can let you take one swing at my skull with that Louisville slugger? I don't know what to do, Dan. I went to Berkeley, not the one in the 60s. Here comes our friendly helicopter. He's checking in on us. He's going to make sure we are okay. And here's why that Coast Guard or naval helicopter is checking in on us. Because they know what the next topic is. The next topic has to do with, I have a plan. And yeah, it's not really the plan of moving. That's a plan. But there's a meta plan. I have a plan to kill Adolf Hitler in the 1920s. It turns out that if you can introduce enough entropy or chaos to what's called the general causality field, you can take the trailing edge of the now and push it back in time, perhaps up to 100 years, perhaps to go back to the year 1923, Bo Blimp Doc. Of course, the function that defines how far the trailing edge, that's the trailing edge, the leading edge of the moment is called the edge of the future. That's always there. That's always fixed. But almost like a teardrop with a trailing edge, you can go back based upon the amount of entropy, like I said, within the general causality field. More entropy per space-time, the farther you can go back. But it is confined by the root function. So you could say the trailing edge of the now is defined by the square root of entropy divided by space-time. That's right. If you want to just have a general sense of how far you can go back, given the amount of space-time you intend to impact and the amount of entropy or chaos you want to introduce into the general causality field, the function that defines the limits is TE of x equals root of entropy divided by space-time. In fact, you could say that entropy divided by space-time, or A of x, is more or less a definition, a mathematical definition of what's called the general causality field. And this causality field represents that combination of space, time, and entropy that more or less can result in densities that can push the trailing edge back far enough that, yeah, you could go back and you could kill Hitler. You see, in this particular model, there is no multiverse. It's really the multi-present. In terms of Schrodinger's cat thought experiment, the cat is either alive or dead until the trailing edge of the present crosses over that event. Once it has, it is by definition in the past. But until the trailing edge of the now is reached by that event, and let's say the trailing edge goes back 20 minutes, well, for that period of time, for that entire sense of the now, the present, the cat's alive, the cat's dead, it's unresolved. I also call it the unresolved now. If you wanted to think of a moment as a finite point in time, there probably are parts of the universe, hundreds of light years away from anything, where the temperatures approach absolute zero, and the vacuum is nearly perfect, and nothing ever happens. That would be a perfect moment, a perfect Newtonian moment. But wherever there's entropy within space-time, the present isn't a second or a millisecond. In some naive, basic cases, it could be 10 to 20 minutes of lack of resolution. In some worse cases, like let's say our government's been traveling through time. And again, in this model, there isn't an infinite number of timelines. There's just one. It's actually horrifying in that sense. But it doesn't become the history until the trailing edge of the now passes an event. So once the event goes into that final past, it's done. It's history. The cat is dead or it's alive, it's not both. But like I said, what if you had enough chaos, enough entropy within the general causality field, or you could introduce it using a quantum computer, then potentially the trailing edge of the now could go back 100 years, far enough in the past where you could go back and, you know, take out Adolf Hitler. Another thing about singular timeline theory versus the multiverse is it would explain just as well things like the Mandela effect. if our government has been messing with the timeline and expanding or dilating the present, it would mean many things like Kool-Aid, Publishers Clearing House, and other stuff could be theoretically in a state of non-resolution, which means until that trailing edge is passed, that point in time, it's hard to say if a thing is one or the other. So maybe the trailing edge of the now does go back 100 years. Maybe it goes back 50 years, but let's play pretend and say we can push it back 100. How would you do it? Once you've introduced enough chaos into the general causality field, how would you go back? Well, imagine you could simulate the effects of relativity while keeping X, Y, and Z fixed. Imagine you could impact T in the vector of motion, but not impact displacement. So let's say you have a simple experiment involving kinetics. It's an inclined plane experiment. You have a metal ball bearing. It will accelerate at a certain rate, and then at a certain point in the process, it has potential energy that becomes kinetic energy. But let's say you could somehow inject an object with energy. In essence, sort of like hijacking Einstein's relativity, but thinking of it in terms of energy versus displacement. Because again, with Einstein, you go pretty close to the speed of light, time and space dilates, you move faster through time than anyone else. That's your forward travel. And back in the 50s, they did take atomic clocks up into jet airplanes, and they more or less proved that there is time dilation. But like I said, what if you could keep X, Y, and Z fixed? Which is another way of saying you don't run into the paradox of, well, Dan, what if you go backwards or forwards in time and the Earth is in the wrong place? Well, if you keep X, Y, and Z constant, then that's not an issue. You'll simply disappear and reappear. Like, let's say you had a coffee cup on a laboratory table and you had a holographic photonic injection system, a system that could inject photonic energy into the electron fields of every molecule, every atom, in a balanced dispersed way, because if you don't do that, you're just going to tear something to pieces. Imagine you could inject the amount of energy into that coffee cup that would be roughly equivalent to reaching, let's say, 95% the speed of light. Well, that coffee cup would disappear for a period of time, given the energy you injected into it, but that energy would dissipate. And then it would, in maybe a few minutes, slowly appear almost ghost-like. Don't touch it, though, because what happens next will be bad. Because if you touch it or stick your hand in it, oh, look at me, it's a ghost coffee cup. Well, then it reappears. Your hand is caught in the cup. You're screaming for help. You get sent to Area 51 for study. They're going to study you for the rest of your life. Stick things up your, you know, dingit hole. Put probes inside of your grobus. Look for juices that are on the looses. So again, you have to imagine this time machine works a little bit like a hologram, except for inverse. Instead of using photonic energy to represent, and I'm going to let these folks pass because they're talking fun stuff, and, you know, not living on board it. They're going to buy a sailboat, and they're going to travel to Hawaii, but along the way, sharks will destroy their boat and probably eat them for lunch, but they don't know this yet. They don't need to know. No one needs to know, really. So when you're thinking of a time machine in this context, again, imagine the now is kind of like concrete that hasn't dried out yet. So it could be a little bit thick or it could be really thick. In this scenario, we're talking about a level of thickness where the present goes back 100 years, unresolved, like Schrodinger's cat. Could be alive, could be dead, could be Kool-Aid with a C, could be Kool-Aid with a K. We won't know for a while yet, baby. So basically, it's like a hologram, except instead of producing an object that is a simulation, what you're doing is you're using probably a really advanced computer to map every molecule in the body, every electron field, and to figure out the appropriate amount of basically photonic energy that you can inject into the system, whereby you would create the relativistic effects of changing t, that's time, in the vector, without impacting x, y, and z. Again, this is just, excuse me, man, that was gross. This is just applying relativity in reverse. Then imagine you discover a photon, but it's not a photon. You can call it anti-energy, you can call it an anti-photon. But instead of an electron absorbing one of these and releasing, you know, and jumping an energy level, it absorbs one and releases two actual photons. So it takes an anti-photon, jumps down an energy level, and releases two. This would be essentially your system for sinking through the unresolved present. If you can, again, imagine the unresolved present as concrete that's still wet, what you want to do is sink. And the way you sink is by injecting an object with negative energy and producing time contraction and space contraction, which is essentially the inverse to the effects of relativity at speeds close to the speed of light. So you go into this machine, it's turned all the way up. There's a drunken Irishman at the wicked controls. He pushes a button, he throws a switch. You feel a slight chill because it's negative energy. And then you disappear to another year. 1923, you show up someplace, maybe Munich. Perhaps you find a young, well, youngish, 30-ish, whatever, early 30s, late 20s Adolf Hitler, a young Hitler, and he's at a beer hall getting drunk and talking all kinds of crap, and you say to yourself, well, now I can do it, Dan. You told me how to travel through time. Hopefully this is crazy because, by the way, if this is feasible, you should never do it. You go back there, you take him out, and then you say, now what, Dan? Well, here's the thing. If you built a device you can take with you that will produce relativistic effects impacting T without X, Y, and Z, then you could go forward. But here's the problem. You just prune the timeline. So in essence, you already made yourself more or less worse than Stalin or Hitler or Mao, because there is no multiverse. What you just did took an entire period of history and snipped it off. You know, think of it like bonsai time. You took your little clippers, you clipped off a tree or two, but it gets worse, buddy. Because in the 1920s, as I've said before, there were lots of quote-unquote people who could have been the Hitler. Hitler, as it was, learned a lot of bad lessons from World War I. He wasn't particularly a great military strategist. And so if it wasn't for his inherent stupidity, the war could have been a lot different. Things could have turned out different. There were many junctures, to include Operation Barbarossa, where they could have turned left instead of right, and much of what we remember could be different. And I say this because this whole plan of going back and killing Hitler is foolhardy. It makes you worse than Hitler because you're basically going to wipe out. You're going to annihilate billions of people. You will still exist because you'll be conserved. But whatever future version of you, whatever future version of your family or your brothers or your sisters, your friends you think will come into existence, guess what? They might never exist. And instead of World War II, ending in 1945, maybe it doesn't end until the year 1975, after several nuclear weapons were used, after the planet is decimated, after the human race is on its way out, the last six or seven people have a peace conference and say, well, you know, I spend all day picking at my radiation tumors, but hey, buddy, maybe it's about time we make peace. Don't go back, even if this idea can work, even if you have the model, you don't have to build the experiment. Don't go back. Don't go do it. There's already enough noise in the general causality field. You know this from Publishers Clearinghouse, baby. That's my advice, baby. Don't go back. So we have some neighbors here at the Greenkentown State Park. And they're kind of mysterious. I mean, we don't know their names. We don't know them personally. They're not far away. They have a really nice RV, this really cool, you know, bus-style RV. But they're a little suspicious. They look nervous. I sit in my chair, smoking a cigarette, and stare at them all day. And the more I stare at them, the more nervous they get. And, you know, again, sitting there staring at them, they look nervous. I'm just a weird old dude in a chair, intently staring. It's weird, though. It kind of makes them nervous. I call them Leo and Rhonda. I don't know if that's their names, Leo and Rhonda, but Leo and Rhonda fits, baby. Yes, Leo and Rhonda. They have a crossover SUV. They got a really nice RV. They're very mysterious. Here are my theories. Theory number one is that they're basically going down to Mexico. They're buying pharmaceuticals, cancer drugs, OxyContin, you name it, at the pharmacies in Mexico. They're loading up their bus and they're traveling back up here. And then they have link-up points, you know, with various senior citizens who want to save money. They say, come to the park, come to Greenkentown, I'll get you your Oxy. I'll get you your chemo drug. Come to Greenkentown. It's on sale. That's my first theory. Chemo drugs and Oxy. Percocet, you name it, baby. Fentanyl patches. Then another theory I have. Theory concerning our neighbors here at the Greenkentown State Park is that they have a really advanced meth lab. I mean, way more advanced than the crap that Walter White had in Breaking Bad. Great ventilation, great technology, probably almost fully automated in the way that some of Walter White's stuff was. And they're cooking meth. They're cooking meth for the crowd. They're going around the park saying, would you like some meth? Dan, that's really dark. Why would you say something like that? I don't know. It's just a theory. Another theory, it's a mobile suicide bus. It's a place for saying goodbye. They go around the park. They say for, I don't know, like what? $1,000? You can go into the bus. We'll take you in, we'll break you down, and then we'll cook your flesh for biodiesel to power our vehicle. Maybe they just do. They go around, listen, I see that you're kind of old. You're hopeless, man. You're hopeless, Dan. Take the magical bus ride. It's like Ken Kesey's Further Bus, but it goes further, baby. It goes further down the road, down to the great stop sign where you meet the angels, where they tell you what you did, where you're going, baby. It's crazy, Dan. That's a crazy theory. Another theory is that they're feds. They're feds and they're here to watch me while I'm sitting in my chair, smoking my cigarette, watching them. They're watching me. They've got microphones, antenna, various cameras, probably a T-ray scanner. They can see the tumor growing inside my heart. Yeah, they're feds. They could be Satanists. You know, William Shatner, I forget the name of the film, but back in the 70s, I think he made a lot of films before he reemerged as Kirk again. A lot of really skeezy films. And he made this one film, as I recall. It wasn't Valley of the Spiders. That was another crap one. But he made this film about him being with his family in the desert, in an RV, in a Winnebago, being chased by Satanists and witches. They want to grab their blood. They want to do their ceremony. They want to take the RV and take the show on the road. Damn, that's crazy. It is crazy. It could be that this bus is a mobile slaughterhouse, you know, a mobile slaughterhouse, because they're harvesting human flesh for taco meat. They have a special contract with Taco Time. They harvest cheap flesh. No one asks questions. Sometimes they create pork chops. Just ignore the tattoo. Be polite at the restaurant. Hey, is this a tattoo? Oh my God, that's horrible, Dan. They're not harvesting, but what happened to Colin and Benji, baby? What happened to Colin and Benji if they weren't tossed into the chipper? If they weren't turned into taco meat? Yeah, you'll see the tattoo, and you'll say to yourself, I don't need to know. It's not my job. I pay my taxes, and I really love this taco salad from Taco Time. It's crazy, people. It's crazy what happens at Grinkentown State Park. Another possibility is exotic pet sales. They're driving their crossover SUV to deliver tigers and bears and wombats. They're delivering various types of advanced spiders and types of grongo freaks. They have python and scorpion and who knows what else. They could have those Chinese murder hornets. They could have the snakehead fish. They could have various creatures that are going to escape into the Olympic National Forest and then one day create a whole new biome. It's madness. It's crazy. The stuff that happens at the state park. Another possibility for this, you know, RV, it's very nice. They're very clean-cut folk. They're just nervous looking because I sit in my chair staring at them while I smoke my cigarette. It could be that this is a stealthy, well-camouflaged, mobile, intermediate-range ballistic missile delivery system for a tactical nuclear weapon ranging and dialable between roughly 5 kilotons up to 100 kilotons. If you consider that Hiroshima was about 20 kilotons, more like 15, then you could go from 5 kilotons all the way up to 100 kilotons, which is like a whole bunch of Hiroshima. And why would they be parking this mobile nuclear missile system at Grinkentown State Park? Why not? It's 2023. The Russians are coming for you. They're coming for me. That's what the TV says. Putin's coming for you. Putin's coming for you, putty. Putin's coming for you, putty. So we better have those mobile launch vehicles ready to go in case the Russians and the Chinese and the Krasnovians and the Canadians and the various tribes of the Arctic and the Antarctic and the people of the jungle, they'll load up their ships and their rickshaws and their submarines. They'll load up into containers. They'll drill tunnels below your feet. Dan, there's no way that's a U.S. Air Force IRBM system. Well, it might not be the Air Force. It could be a CIA system. It could be people from other countries who have already invaded. They've set up the system. They're waiting for the go signal. They probably are carrying machine guns to take out people nearby. Anything is possible at the Grinkentown Washington State Park near the sea. They could be terrorists. They could be terrorists ready to terrorize us. And the other possibility, when I go down this list and I think about myself sitting in that chair and staring at them with a blank face for hours on end, the other possibility, they're just normal people and I don't know crap about them. And that's probably most likely. But isn't it whimsical and special to imagine something crazier, something more adventurous involving Bo Derek and Sean Connery? He's dead, right? But if he were alive, maybe Mel Gibson, some action figure, somebody crazy, Jean-Claude Van Damme. So, on a related note, probably the simplest kind of mind control that any person can practice, and keep in mind, this doesn't apply to everybody, there's exceptions to every rule, but if you're ever in a room full of people and you want to practice a little bit of mind control, pick a person and just start staring at them. Don't smile, don't frown, blank face. Blank face means question mark. Just stare at them. If they come over, look the other way. Then stare at them again, really intently. And then if they walk over, look away. This will raise their blood pressure. This will create anxiety and distress. And even though it's not very complicated mind control, it's fairly simple. All you have to do is keep a blank face, sit in your nasty chair, smoke your cigarette, and stare at somebody. But Dan, it's rude to stare. No. It's rude to stare because people know what it does. It raises your blood pressure. It makes you nervous. I think it's connected to the fact that we are who we are. I mean, it's nice to play pretend and imagine that long ago we wandered the grasslands eating grass and tomatoes and potatoes and apples, but in reality, we're social predators, a lot like wolves in that sense. We organize into groups, we're pack hunters. We've been pack hunters for tens of thousands of years. The great exception to pack hunting, if we want to put on our secular hat and take off our Christian hat for a second, the great exception has been civilization, the great simulation of life, the great fakery. But prior to that, for hundreds of thousands of years, we were organized pack hunters. That's what we did. And the thing about pack hunters is that that stare is aggressive. It kind of means you're sizing somebody up, maybe even for a meal. Dan, what do you mean? Didn't you tell me you got a little bit of Neanderthal in you? Well, the Neanderthal are no longer with us, really. But a lot of them were killed. And probably a number of them were, raped. They could have been nice people. People who never stare. People who bring a gift when you move into their neighborhood. Sklimbo and Gombo, about 70,000 years ago, came to the door of a Homo sapiens and said, "Welcome to my neighborhood. We smile, we hug, we trust, we want to be your friend." Of course, Jeeves and McDivitt were living in that shack. Jeeves, not Jesus. Jeeves and McDivitt. And they knew a couple things. They knew how to fool people. They knew how to lie. They knew how to cheat and steal because they were good Homo sapiens. And so they invited Sklimbo and Gombo in. Sklimbo and Gombo left the next day, via the latrine. And then they went for the sisters. No, it turns out that the simplest way to impact another person, to impact their state, is to simply stare at them. There are more advanced techniques. If you understand the placebo effect, you understand it has an opposite side. That's kind of what we saw in 2020, the opposite side of the placebo effect. As much as you can be convinced that a sugar pill is going to cure you, you can be convinced it'll poison you. And that includes being convinced that there's a magical bug that crawls up the poop pipes that is infecting everybody, to include cats and dogs. And that's 2020 in a nutshell. That's more advanced mind control. What I'm talking about is entry-level kindergarten. If you want to have fun at a party, sit in the corner by yourself. Pick someone, it doesn't matter who, and start staring at them. Back in 2020, I took video of police copters in Little Saigon. I took video of police drones in Little Saigon. They'd fly around the buildings, looking in windows. And the thing about drones and police helicopters and spy satellites and one-way windows or one-way glass at an interrogation room at the police station, and the ubiquitous cameras, is it creates a sense of life today. A sense of existence where even if you're not being watched, a lot like the panopticon, even if you're not being watched, you feel like you could be being watched. And this raises your blood pressure. In fact, I would argue the existence of a camera, statistically, according to the law of large numbers, all things being equal, these cameras and these spying techniques and all these things probably increase the general blood pressure enough that a certain number of people die every year because of it. I would make that argument. I think in the UK, where they got cameras everywhere, I bet there's a percentage of people that just drop dead, not immediately from the camera, but the accumulated stress. Because there might even be a spooky sense in which we notice that somebody's watching. In the same way that our consciousness is aware that somebody's screwing with the timeline, Mandela effect, we can sense somebody's watching, somebody's looking, somebody's drilling laser beam holes through the back of my head. They're watching what I'm doing. They see what I'm doing. I'm not perfect. I'm always making mistakes. So there's your kindergarten, first grade, very basic mind control. Sit in a corner, smoke a cigarette, and just pick somebody you're going to stare at with a blank face. And remember, if they come over, look a different direction. If they come over, tell them you thought you were someone else. Oh, I wasn't looking at you. I was looking at that painting. I wasn't looking at you. I thought you were my ex-wife. I wasn't looking at you. I'm so sorry. And then when they go back, you start staring again. If you listen to this podcast and you enjoy it, I appreciate you listening. Here's my boilerplate standard speech. If you like the podcast before you donate, if you feel like you need to donate, make sure you do the following. Before you give a random stranger any of your money on the internet, make sure you take care of your food, your water, your shelter. If you're setting aside a little extra food for yourself or your family, and you have a pet, a dog, a cat, a parrot, make sure you set aside a little extra food for your pet. Especially if it's a dog, because I'll tell you something, that dog is going to do a lot to protect you. And if you live in a rural area and you're kind of agricultural, well, those cats will help you with the rats and the mice and the other creatures that want to get your high carbo, high diabetes, you know, materials inside of your barn. I'm kidding. There are probably people in your life that could use help. Before you give a random stranger any of your money, try to help the people around you. If you have family and friends that need help, if you have a neighbor, try to help them first. And remember that, yeah, things are kind of crazy right now. Let's not play pretend. They're kind of crazy. But that doesn't mean it's the end of the world. It just means things are crazy. And so before you give a random stranger any of your money, try to enjoy this life. Because it's never been guaranteed, ever. If you see it from a Christian perspective, guess what? Never been guaranteed. This is not Eden. This is not heaven. This is not the Millennium Kingdom. And it's not hell. It's life. Life is not perfect, but it doesn't mean it's hell. So try to enjoy life. And if you're an atheist, guess what? Life was never guaranteed. You could die tomorrow. So try to find some joy today. It doesn't mean you should go into debt or, you know, ruin a marriage. I'm not advising you to go crazy. This isn't Rock Hudson in the movie Seconds, where you fake your death and you become a different person. This is more of take a break before you send a random stranger any of your money. If it takes a little bit of cash to do it, take a break. But if you've done all these things and you're a Texas billionaire or a Bitcoin baron, or you're making gazillions of dollars off of selling weapons to somebody, because it is the Death Star and none of us are clean. Then you should donate if you want to. Just to tell you, just to give my listeners an update, I have a kind of plan right now. and it involves traveling a great distance, almost 3,000 miles. And the cheapest way I've found to get there, given the stuff I have, is to take the Greyhound. And the trip will take a few days. Like, it says 105 hours, we'll see. Right now, I don't have all the funds to buy the ticket. And the ticket plus a little bit of extra money to give me some, you know, cushion works out to about $500, $400 to $500 I need to raise. And I feel bad because about 10 days ago, I made the same request. I said, listen, I need help. Help me. I need to purchase some time at the park. I need to figure my next steps or the way out or where I'm going. So I don't know how I feel about asking again, but here's the good news, brothers and sisters. This is a plan. I have a place I can go to. I will give you more information about it per the host and their privacy as I can. All you need to know is it's east of here. And as I've said, going back 9 years, a lot of this is just changing seats on an airplane, my friends. You know, my main issue is having lived in Little Saigon and having seen how far the deprivation goes for people that reach the bottom rung of homelessness, I don't want to go there. And so if it means moving to a place that I would never have thought of moving to, guess what? I'll go there. But in order to get there, I need to raise some funds between $400 and $500. If you donated 10 days ago and you're tapped out, I understand. And you don't need to donate. And this is more or less a request of somebody who feels like they have the cash to do it. But yeah, I've got a plan. I just need to purchase a ticket. And is it a perfect plan? No. What did Patton say? Give me a good plan now versus a perfect plan later. This is a good plan. It's not perfect. There are lots of question marks, both for me and my host. They don't know if I'm a crazy person. They don't know if I'll show up with it. Look at my axe collection. I collect hatchets and axes. They were so important, I took them. I paid extra on the Greyhound. Would you like to see my shiny silver axe? The one I take to bars and I say to people, here's $100. You can listen to me for a minute, talk really foul, or I can take the axe and give you one good swing for $100, baby. And you know, there are people who knows, man. Like the RV I told you about. These are dark times and people might say, okay, baby. And not so much because they're against free speech, but they're looking to go to Canada, as the kids say. It is Wednesday, just after 1 p.m. here in Greenkentown State Park in the state of Washington on the peninsula. Not far from Squim or Port Angeles, not far from Scoblon or the village of Drimbley. Not far from the Strait of Juan de Fuca. Oh my gosh, I can't believe you said that. I did. Not far from tomorrow, really. Not far from the next day. It is August the 30th, 2023, Wednesday, 1:07 p.m. Have a great rest of your day, okay?